Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Midland leaders to vote on city increase to firefighters' pension. The Midland City Council will vote on an ordinance increasing the city's employer contribution rate to the Midlands Firemen's Relief and Retirement Fund from 22.2% to 24.2% during its meeting Tuesday. According to city documents, the increase will partially remedy the unfunded liability for the Midland Firefighters Relief and Retirement Fund. Funding for the increase will come out of the city's general fund, according to city documents. City documents state that the unfunded liability is $109.123 million as of December 31st, 2021. City documents state that this is one of several potential actions to be taken by both the firefighters and the city to move the funding status of the pension within acceptable range as set forth by the Pension Review Board of Texas. The change, should it be voted for, will take effect on January 1, 2024. The Texas Local Firefighters Retirement Act shows the following employer contributions: 13.25% in Wichita Falls, 15% in Big Spring, 20.20% in San Angelo, 20.82% in Amarillo, 21.25% in Abilene, 21.75% in Lubbock, and 28% in Odessa. Again, city leaders are voting to move the city's contribution from 22.2% to 24.2%. This could be the first of 2% increases that the city makes to the firefighters' pension, Midland Mayor Lori Blong previously stated. A 2% increase would mean an additional $481,000 from the city of Midland annually, according to the city. The Texas Local Firefighters Retirement Act shows the following employee contributions: 13% in Wichita Falls, 13% in Big Spring, 14% in Amarillo, 14.2% in Midland, 14.98% in Lubbock, and 15.2% in Abilene, 16% in Odessa, and 18.5% in San Angelo. Between 2000 and 2019, the fund went from a stable funded ratio of 93.7% to 51.1%, according to an intensive actuarial review in a previous Reporter Telegram article. Investment underperformance was the primary contributor to an increase in unfunded actuarially accrued liability, since investments have underperformed their assumed rate of return of 7.5% by more than 2%, only achieving a 10-year compounded return of 5.1% over the last decade, despite a strong bull market during that same period. Inadequate contributions and assumption changes also exacerbated the UAAL increase, since the reliance on investment returns to pay benefits increases as the funded ratio declines, which compounds the negative effects of underperforming assets. Even with an increase in city contributions and a pair of steps Midland Fire Department members earlier this year approved to drop that liability, it is expected that there will be the need of an infusion of tens of millions of dollars in cash or bond money to help make the pension whole again. Apartment rents in Midland drop for second straight month. The price for an apartment in Midland dropped for the second straight month, according to apartmentlist.com. The online apartment guide showed in its monthly rent report that the monthly rent of an apartment in Midland fell 0.5% in November. The decline was common, as only two larger cities across the state reported monthly increases, Odessa at 2.4% and Victoria at 0.4%. Midland did buck a trend with a yearly percentage increase, at least compared to the largest metropolitan areas, with a reported increase of 14.7% year over year. Odessa's increase compared to November 2022 was 14.2%. Apartmentlist.com reported the median one-bedroom rent in Midland during the month of November was $917. That compared to $774 in Odessa and $897 in San Angelo. The median rent for a two-bedroom apartment was $1,150 in Midland, $1,019 in Odessa, and $1,102 in San Angelo. No other West Texas communities were reported. Large metropolitan areas reported the following median two-bedroom rents: $1,265 in San Antonio, $1,275 in Houston, $1,286 in Fort Worth, and $1,420 in Dallas, and $1,687 in Austin. Apartmentlist.com also stated the rental market's seasonal slowdown continued nationwide in November, with the monthly median rent falling 0.9% to $1,340, the fourth consecutive month of negative rent growth. Year-over-year rent growth remains in negative territory at minus 1.1%, meaning that on average, apartments across the country are slightly cheaper today than they were 1 year ago, ApartmentList.com reported. This stands in sharp contrast to the prevailing conditions of 2021 and 2022. Dear Abby, my wife is a very attractive 56. For years, she has wanted Botox treatments. Recently, it has become more serious because she feels she looks like a grandmother. I and others continue to tell her how great she looks, especially when she dresses up. I also tell her Botox is a short-term fix and will require subsequent treatments. Additionally, with each treatment, she will risk potential problems of infection, allergic reaction, or medical mistakes. I remind her of the treatments that have gone wrong and that none of those women went to their doctors asking to look like a retired boxer. At this point, I'm concerned she may be depressed about aging and wants to do something to improve her looks, but I'm standing in her way. I love her just as she is, and I don't want her to do anything that ultimately could do damage. To me, the ultimate depression would be doing something harmful that can't be corrected. Please advise. Dear Abby responds, you clearly adore your wife and want what is best for her. That's why you should consider scheduling a consultation for both of you with a board-certified dermatologist who can explain the benefits and risks of using Botox. It may put some of your concerns to rest. When administered by a medical professional, there is little risk of a bad outcome. While you are correct that the effects last only a few months, Botox is popular among women in her age group and those even younger. The only drawback is that it isn't cheap. During your discussion, you may also want to ask about other products that are available and last longer, such as fillers. Another Dear Abby asks, I let a friend who was going through a hard time stay on my couch when he would get too drunk to drive. 11 years later, he's still here. I told him from the beginning not to get hooked or fall in love with me because I knew I would never feel the same. He has taken over my life with his collections, but won't sell anything. He also doesn't pay any bills. I do not like his drinking. I am sober. He yells and screams for sex, but I don't give in. I told him he needs to move on. I'm on disability and a fixed income. Legal eviction, restraining order. He has threatened to walk away and leave me to deal with all his junk. Help, Dear Abby answers. You have been too kind for far too long. Before doing anything, talk with an attorney because of the length of time you have allowed this person to live with you rent-free. If you can't afford legal counsel, reach out to your local legal aid or legal services office. If the freeloader agrees to go, leaving his collections behind, you may be able to sell or donate the items. Should he refuse to leave your home, you may have to formally evict him, which, depending upon the laws in your state, could be complicated without legal guidance. And you can contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or Post Office Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Hawaiian Brothers open to public. Midlanders from all over stopped by Hawaiian Brothers on Saturday for the new restaurant's VIP opening day. Every guest received free food while location employees and corporate representatives directed traffic and greeted customers with native sayings, aloha and mahalo. Both the drive-thru and parking lot stayed packed, and patrons filled every table inside the small interior. Blue and white paintings covered the walls, while light brown chairs and booth benches made up seating, offering a beach-like sensation through color recognition. High tops, two-seaters, and family-style seating make up the majority of the tables. Natural light floods the space, courtesy of large windows, and a small kitchen window marks food pickup. After ordering at one of the two touchscreen kiosks, guests move to the left of the kitchen window to fill up their drinks, find a seat, and wait for someone to deliver their food. Although the restaurant buzzed with hungry community members, Saturday's trial run felt smooth and rehearsed. During my experience, no hiccups occurred, and each employee beamed with excitement and anticipation for the future. Hawaiian Brothers hours run 11 a.m. to midnight, Monday through Sunday. Find the Island Grill at 3320 West Loop 250 North. With each plate, guests receive a scoop of rice, a scoop of macaroni salad, and a heaping of protein on top of a bed of rice. Protein options include huli huli chicken, teriyaki, molokai chicken, mild, medium, sweet, and spicy, lai lai yu'ia chicken, lava hot sweet and spicy, seasoned veggies for non-meat eaters, and lu'alu pig, slow-roasted kalua pork with Hawaiian sea salt. And I don't know if I said any of those correctly. Personally, I enjoyed the Honolulu chicken, which resembled sesame chicken, but with shredded meat instead of nugget-style pieces. Other sides include pineapple or spam, musubi, slice of spam, speared and glazed in teriyaki on top of rice, wrapped in dried seaweed. And here's a tip. Since the protein tops lots of rice, substitute the scoop of rice with pineapple. The fruity, acidic flavor pairs nicely with any of the protein options. As for veggie eaters, is Hawaiian Brothers a fair option for a big, filling meal? Yes. Is it the best? No. As a proud veggie lover, the vegetarian option did not live up to the flavors found in the chicken, and I'm sure other meat and macaroni salad. Proceed with your own veggie expectations. Overall, Hawaiian Brothers gives you what you pay for. The plates provide more than enough food for one person. The employees are some of the nicest and helpful in town, and the fact that Midland now has an option beyond fried chicken is a major plus. Obituaries. Lexine Weaver, 85 of Midland, passed away on December the 9th. A visitation will be held at 9 a.m. Thursday, December the 14th, at Naley, Pickle, and Welch Funeral Home. Services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Thursday, December the 14th, at Naley, Pickle, and Welch Funeral Home Chapel at 3800 North Big Spring Street in Midland. Kelly Douglas Tucker passed away on December the 6th. Memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. Wednesday, December the 13th at Nailey Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel in Midland. Tamika Moten, age 32, passed away on Friday, December the 1st. A viewing and celebration of life service was held on Saturday, December the 9th at the Mayberry Funeral Home Hope Chapel. Jeremiah Null, 21, of Midland, passed away on December the 4th. Memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. Wednesday, December the 13th, 2023, at the Branch at NPW, with a reception following the service. Arrangements are under the direction of the Nailey Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Muro Zuniga III, age 41, passed away December the 8th. Viewing will be held from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. Tuesday, December the 12th, at Nailey Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. The funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Tuesday, December the 12th, at Nailey Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel, with interment following at Serenity Memorial Garden Cemetery. Carolyn Puckett Cockrell, age 77, of Midland, passed away on December the 8th. Memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, December the 15th, at Nailey Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Occidental to buy Crown Quest asset, Crown Rock. Occidental Petroleum Corporation agreed to acquire Texas shale driller Crown Rock LP in a cash and stock deal valued at about $10.8 billion. As consolidation heats up in North America's most prolific oil basin. The transaction is expected to close in the first quarter of 2024, subject to regulatory approvals, Occidental said Monday in a statement. The company has lined up about $10 billion of committed bridge financing through Bank of America Corporation, according to an investor presentation. That's expected to be replaced with more permanent financing, including term loans and bonds. Crown Quest Operating LLC, which is based in Midland, manages the assets of Crown Rock. Tim Dunn runs Crown Quest and offered the following to the Midland Reporter-Telegram about the deal. The purchase of Crown Rock by Occidental is a multi-win proposition. Oxy is committed to the Permian Basin and intends to offer employment to all eligible Crown Rock employees, and so it is good for our community. I believe the resulting expanded capital base and combined expertise from Occidental's acquisition of Crown Rock will lead to increased capital efficiencies, enhanced oil production, and will advance American energy independence. And although smaller in scope, Crown Quest remains in business. This sale includes only Crown Rock, our Midland Basin oil and gas partnership with Lime Rock Partners. The principals of Crown Quest will still have our doors open at our same Clay Desta location and will retain our other lines of business that do not involve operation of Midland Basin properties. We congratulate Occidental and look forward to seeing their historically successful company continue to grow and prosper. Occidental plans to issue about $1.7 billion in new shares to fund the deal. Occidental's agreement with Crown Rock comes as oil executives face pressure from investors to keep buybacks and dividends flowing, even as the North American shale sector matures and growth slows. With many of the best production sites already tapped, companies flush with cash from the post-pandemic run-up in oil prices are increasingly buying rivals to secure new places to drill. The deal follows ExxonMobil Corporation's $60 billion agreement to buy Pioneer Natural Resources Company and Chevron Corp's pending $53 billion takeover of Hess Corporation. Crown Rock, the third largest closely held oil producer in the Permian Basin, has operations that complement assets Occidental acquired through its massive 2019 takeover of Anadarko Petroleum Corporation. To secure that deal, Chief Executive Officer Vicki Hullub secured a $10 billion investment from Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway Incorporation, which is now Occidental's biggest shareholder. Berkshire did not provide funding for the Crown Rock deal, Occidental Chief Executive Officer Vicki Hullub said in an interview on CNBC. The terms calls for Occidental to assume $1.2 billion in debt held by Crown Rock, giving the deal an enterprise value of about $12 billion. Occidental also said Monday it was increasing its dividend 22% to 22 cents per share and initiating a $4.5 billion to $6 billion divestiture program to reduce debt. The deal offers a clear boost to Occidental's holdings in the prolific Permian Basin. Bloomberg intelligence analyst Evan Lee and Vincent G. Piazza said in a research note, though the $12 billion price, including the assumption of $1.2 billion in debt, is on the higher end of our analysis, the region's large acreage blocks offer scarcity value, the analysts wrote. While the need to line up future drilling sites is driving much of the deal-making in U.S. shale basins, Occidental's deal for Crown Rock wasn't just about inventory, Hullub said on a call with analysts. It was done because the cash flow accretion was so significant, she said. Plus, Crown Rock's high-quality wells with low decline rates would help us in downturns, while underpinning strong shareholder cash returns in moderate to high price environments, Hullub said. Occidental plans to keep all five of Crown Rock's drilling rigs up and running for now, indicating that the company's 170,000 barrels a day will directly add to the Houston-based company's existing production. That's a shift from the strategy taken by Civitas Resources, Inc., and other producers earlier this year, who cut back on rigs when buying competitors in an effort to trim costs and slow down the pace of production. Crown Rock, based in Midland, is backed by private equity firm Lime Rock Partners. Crown Quest Operating LLC, which manages the assets of Crown Rock, increased production 15% through the first 6 months of this year, according to industry data provider Enverus. That's on top of last year's 21% output growth and the 36% expansion in 2020, according to Crown Quest. Crown Rock is run by Tim Dunn, an influential Republican donor who has spent more than $20 million over the past decade or so to support conservative politicians. He is poised to be a potent force in the 2024 election, pushing candidates in Texas further to the right in races up and down the ballot. Dunn has also backed Donald Trump before, contributing $300,000 to the Trump Victory Joint Fundraising Committee in 2020, but so far he hasn't donated to the former president this year. In the run-up to the deal, Occidental's corporate jet flew from Houston, where headquarters are located, to Omaha, Buffett's home, on November the 27th and stayed grounded for about 3 hours. It was the second time Oxy's jet visited Omaha in November, having not previously made the trip since May, flight data show. Occidental will restart share repurchases once its outstanding debt returns to about $15 billion, Chief Financial Officer Sunil Matthews said. He sees rapid deleveraging next year due to the asset sale plan and free cash flow generated by Crown Rock. Occidental's financial advisor for the deal is BofA Securities, an affiliate of which is providing financing. City leaders to vote on $14.9 million in renovations to East Midland Park. The Midland City Council will vote on a pair of planned improvements to raise Mashburn Nelms Park in East Midland. The city agenda packet states that the votes are for improvements to the baseball field complex, which includes installing new turf fields or fields 1 through 4, 5, and 8. The total cost to turf the fields would be $13.174 million, according to city documents. $12,547,425 for the turf fields and $627,371 from contingency. Funding for the project is available in the unappropriated fund balance of the Park Special Purpose or Oil Fund, according to the city. In addition, city leaders will vote on a resolution to purchase and install LED lighting at the Rays Mashburn Nelms baseball fields for a total cost of $1.757 million. According to city documents, Laurie Williams, interim community service manager, stated that Musco LED lighting has been installed in most of the city's upgraded fields and are superior in quality, and the Musco company has a track record of timely service. Funding for the lighting project will also come out of the Park Special Purpose Fund. In August, according to a Reporter Telegram story, the City of Midland added around $20 million to what became the Park Special Purpose Fund that was established to help improve parks around the city. According to a Reporter Telegram story from March, a parks renovation plan for Rays Mashburn Nelms Park showed 4 little league baseball fields, 4 high school baseball fields, 4 t-ball fields, and 3 U-13 soccer fields. There are also proposed pavilions, a walking trail, and a parking lot with 862 total parking spaces. Calling all Swifties, Taylor Swift birthday party in Midland. Calling all Swifties, the Centennial Library is hosting a Taylor Swift-themed birthday party for the international pop star on Wednesday. To celebrate the 2023 Person of the Year's 34th birthday, the Centennial Library will have a 2-hour party featuring a friendship bracelet crafting station, Swiftie trivia, speakers booming an extended playlist, only Taylor's version, hopefully, and more. The library also encourages participants to wear their best Taylor outfits for the occasion. The event is open to all ages, and a special teen area can also be found. The birthday party runs 4 to 6 p.m. Wednesday at 2503 West Loop 250 North. Although Taylor Swift has been a force to be reckoned with since 2006, with her debut album, Taylor Swift, made its way into the music scene, the multi-award winner became a household name for all industry followers after she dropped her first re-recording, Fearless, Taylor's version, in April 2021. The re-recordings, which allowed Swift to own her own music, not only bring the record-breaking songs back to life, but also feature never-before-heard tunes from the vault. Swift's The Eras Tour began in mid-March and is currently scheduled to run through December the 8th of 2024. This Day in History. On this date in 1787, Pennsylvania became the second state to ratify the U.S. Constitution. In 1870, Joseph H. Rainey of South Carolina became the first black lawmaker sworn into the U.S. House of Representatives. In 1913, authorities in Florence, Italy, announced that the Mona Lisa, stolen from the Louvre Museum in Paris in 1911, had been recovered. In 1915, singer-actor Frank Sinatra was born Francis Albert Sinatra in Hoboken, New Jersey. In 1917, during World War I, a train carrying some 1,000 French troops from the Italian front derailed while descending a steep hill in Modane. At least half of the soldiers were killed in France's greatest rail disaster. In 1977, the dance movie Saturday Night Fever, starring John Travolta, premiered in New York. In 1985, 248 American soldiers and 8 crew members were killed when an Arrow Air charter crashed after takeoff from Gander, Newfoundland. In 1995, by 3 votes, the Senate killed a constitutional amendment giving Congress authority to outlaw flag burning and other forms of desecration against Old Glory. In 2000, George W. Bush became president-elect as a divided U.S. Supreme Court reversed a state court decision for recounts in Florida's contested election. In 2010, the inflatable roof of the Minneapolis Metrodome collapsed following a snowstorm that had dumped 17 inches on the city. In 2018, Michael Cohen, President Donald Trump's one-time fixer, was sentenced to 3 years in prison for crimes that included arranging the payment of hush money to conceal Trump's alleged sexual affairs. In 2019, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson led his Conservative Party to a landslide victory in a general election that was dominated by pretext. In 2020, thousands of supporters of President Donald Trump gathered in Washington for rallies to back his desperate efforts to subvert the election that he lost to Joe Biden. And today's birthdays. Basketball Hall of Famer Bob Pettit is 91. Singer Connie Francis is 86. Singer Dionne Warwick is 83. And rock singer-musician Dickie Betts is 80. Zoo Midland, the preserve, go before the Midland City Council. The Midland City Council will vote on designating 2 areas in West Midland for Zoo Midland and the preserve at Midland. Zoo Midland representatives have requested to implement a specific use designation without term for a wildlife rehabilitation center to develop a zoo on the property, according to city documents. The plot of land in question is a 51-acre tract near Grasslands Estate, the site of the former Nueva Vista golf course. The proposal has no financial impact to the city, according to city documents. City staff recommended approval of the request of the specific use designation subject to conditions A through F. A, that the use and development of the property shall significantly conform to the site plan, Exhibit B. B, that the property may be a zoo in which wild animals, poisonous snakes, and other animals may be kept. C, that animals shall be always kept in enclosures unless being handled by a trained expert for educational purposes. That the occupancy of the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center shall not exceed the maximum occupancy determined by the Building Code and Fire Code. That the establishment shall meet all requirements of the Fire Department and Code Administration. F. That the applicant shall obtain a certificate of occupancy prior to the commencement of wildlife rehabilitation facility to ensure that the conditions of this permit are satisfied. A previous Reporter Telegram story says that Zoo Midland would be the first ground-up zoo construction property in the U.S. in 25 years. The preserve at Midland, according to a previous Reporter Telegram story, is a new family-friendly gathering place at the former site of the Nueva Vista Golf Club. Midlanders will enjoy a unique experience with a constant level lake and our boardwalk design that connects the retail and restaurants to the water, providing a one-of-a-kind waterfront attraction to Midland, the Reporter Telegram story reads. With multiple outdoor amenities located throughout the site, there will be a little something for everyone. Boot Lake Ranch Property Owner, LLC, has applied to rezone an 80-acre tract of land, also near Grassland Estates and north of Zoo Midland, from an agricultural estate district to a local retail district, according to city documents. No city funds would be required for this action. Officer involved shooting under investigation. Midland County Sheriff's Office deputies responded to an aggravated assault in Northeast Midland on Monday. The incident occurred at 11:50 a.m., and upon arrival, deputies were involved in an officer-involved shooting. According to the press release, this incident is currently being investigated by the Texas Rangers. More information as it becomes available will be released by the Midland Reporter-Telegram.
Apache credits Permian performance for driving production growth. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Apache Corporation reported positive third-quarter results and credited its Permian Basin well performance and expects more of the same as the year comes to a close. Quote, "Good execution and strong well performance in the Permian Basin were the primary drivers of APA's third-quarter results," said John J. Christman IV, Chief Executive Officer and President of Apache Parent Company, APA, in releasing third-quarter results. Quote, "Adjusted global oil production exceeded the high end of our guidance range and was up by 20% year over year. In Suriname, our appraisal efforts delivered a very positive outcome, confirming estimated recoverable oil resources of 700 million barrels for Sapakara and Krabdagu," end quote. Alexandra Franceschi, spokesperson for Apache, told a reporter telegram by email, quote, "Apache has had a great year in the Permian Basin. The strong execution and well performance in the basin are the primary drivers for the company exceeding its oil production guidance for a third quarter in a row," end quote. The company's Permian oil volumes rose 16% from the third quarter of 2022 to the third quarter of 2023, and 10% in the third quarter from the second quarter. During the fourth quarter, she reported Apache is accelerating the completion of 8 Permian wells from January into December and added a 6th rig in the Delaware Basin. Quote, "We are still developing the Alpine High. The 6th rig in the Delaware is a spot rig and will operate on a pad-to-pad basis. There is flexibility to adjust where it goes next, whether in the Delaware or Southern Midland Basin. We continue to develop Alpine High, and we base drilling decisions in part on market opportunities that offer the best returns," she wrote. Additionally, the company announced it achieved an important milestone in reducing methane emissions with the conversion of more than 2,000 pneumatic devices in the Permian to lower-emitting technologies, she wrote. Quote, "Apache is confident in the continued performance of the Permian Basin assets and the strategic role they play in the company's portfolio," she wrote. ProPetro expands cementing into Delaware with Par 5 buy. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Midland's ProPetro Services continued its merger and acquisition strategy with the acquisition of the assets and business operations of Par 5 Energy Services, which specializes in cementing services in the Delaware Basin. David Schorlemer, ProPetro's chief financial officer, told a reporter telegram the company currently has a strong cementing business in the Midland Basin, but customers had been requesting cementing services in the Delaware Basin. Quote, "We felt we didn't have the right facility until Par 5, he said. Par 5 owned and managed more than 14 cementing spreads, servicing leading oil and natural gas producers in southeastern New Mexico, and had recently finalized a substantial expansion of its bulk plant with the state-of-the-art facilities strategically designed to accommodate heightened operational demands. Schorlemer said ProPetro will make a similar investment in its Midland Basin bulk plant. That, along with the acquisition of Par 5, its assets and operating team, will be beneficial not only to ProPetro, but its customers, he said. Quote, wellbore integrity is dependent on high-quality cementing, he observed. We provide the labs and the skilled technicians. It's an important part of providing reduced risk to our customers, end quote. Matt Augustine, Director, Corporate Development and Investor Relations, sees a bifurcation, specifically on the fracturing side, between lower demand for existing equipment and high demand for the next generation of equipment that uses dual fuels or electricity. That is also being seen on the cementing side, he said. Quote, cementing is very material intensive, and we now have a good bulk plant and lab in southeastern New Mexico that makes us competitive, Augustine said. Having state-of-the-art facilities, whether on the fracturing and wirelines completion side or cementing side, will let ProPetro service the type of customer we're after, Augustine said. Agreed Schorlemer, quote, customers value our assets because of the advantage they give them, end quote. Par 5 was established in Artesia, New Mexico in 2011 by Curtis Toll and the Chase family. Schorlemer said after the acquisition, ProPetro plans to be as supportive of the Artesia community and its employees there as it is of the Midland community and its Midland employees. Carbon management has awoken from long dormant period. The story was written by Mel McEwen, oil editor. Industrial carbon capture, utilization, and sequestration, quote, went through a long dormant period, but now we're seeing great interest. Fred Eames, partner at Hunton Andrews Kurth, told attendees at the CO2 conference this week. He noted recent federal policies are working to incentivize carbon transportation and storage in its drive to transition to low carbon or negative carbon energy. Quote, enhanced oil recovery in particular has a carbon negative oil point to make that is not being heard and without which EOR is and increasingly will be at an unnecessary policy disadvantage, Eames cautioned. Those in attendance need to advocate, quote, not just for your own self-interest, but in the interest of the planet, he said. If you don't stand up for what's right, who else will? End quote. There is a lot of money available through federal tax incentives, said Tim Jacobs, also a partner in Hunton Andrews Kurth. Quote, the reality is there's a $1 trillion program, not just for carbon capture, but other interests across the board, he said. The firm is keeping an eye on 2024, which is a presidential election year, he continued. A potential change in administrations and congressional leadership could impact those incentives, he explained. Quote, you talk about the tax code, sequestration will play an enormous role in creating appropriate levels of carbon intensity, Jacob said. Many tax credits require near zero carbon intensity to receive those credits. We see it in encouragement of blue hydrogen and also transportation provisions, end quote. It's important companies proposing CCS projects be able to demonstrate a reasonable chance of repaying a loan, said Mike O'Leary, a partner in Hunton Andrews Kurth. In addition, he said the projects will have to meet prevailing wage requirements and all the goods used in the project have to be manufactured in the U.S. Ian Goldberg, a partner in Hunton Andrews Kurth, said there are a number of projects where companies are devoting time and assets to amass land parcels, but the efforts are being slowed because states don't have a framework to oversee the projects. Companies need to be careful until there is a state framework overseeing offtake of CO2 supplies, transportation, and sequestration, Goldberg cautioned. Insurance, key part of getting CCS projects approved. The story was written by Mala McEwen, oil editor. Beyond the logistics of carbon capture and sequestration project, the technology, the proper amount of land containing the proper geology, companies also must consider insurance. Michael Ruse, senior vice president, client executive with Marsh McLellan, said insurance is, in truth, financial assurance that the company can pay the cost of cleanup of the site. He told attendees at the CO2 conference this week that regulators want to see that the companies sponsoring CCS projects can fund any necessary corrective actions, plug injection wells, post-injection care, and site closure, and any necessary emergency and remedial response. James Walsh, also a senior vice president, client executive with Marsh McLennan, told the audience, quote, "Project sponsors are on the right side of ESG, environmental, social, and governance. The biggest risk is doing nothing," end quote. He stressed that the process of obtaining Class 6 CO2 injection permits from the Environmental Protection Agency, or states granted primacy by the EPA, is complex and thorough. The EPA has demonstrated it will only grant permits if the location demonstrates essentially perfect geology and the companies proposing the projects have substantial expertise in evaluating CCS projects. Ruse advised those considering such projects to look into obtaining financial assurance early in the process, in part because that is something regulators look at as they consider applications. Some financial mechanisms approved by the EPA include trusts, surety bonds, letters of credit, insurance, self-insurance, and escrow accounts, he said. The project's location also dictates what assurances need to be in place when the application is submitted, Ruse added. Insurance carriers are very willing to insure CCS projects, and some are forming climate-focused teams, he said. He predicted the development of bespoke CCUS insurance products. He also sees a shift in projects from CO2 pipelines to individual project ownership. A key to success is continued community engagement and public education, Ruse said. Quote, "Some misconceptions continue to spill over and hurt the industry. You need to continue to reiterate your expertise and let the public know that, from a risk management standpoint, there are solutions," he said. Outreach, collaboration, key to realizing carbon projects. The story was written by Mala McEwen, oil editor. There are two reasons carbon capture and sequestration, CCS, are being discussed: energy security and climate change. CCS, Joanna Walker, geologist with Tetra Tech, told attendees at the CO2 conference, is a bridge to alternative energy options and is an option for long-term fossil fuel use if needed. There is a steep learning curve, but the oil and gas industry brings technology and experience to the issue, she added. There are challenges as the Biden administration pushes to develop low-carbon or negative-carbon energy. Those include operational monitoring of CCS projects, a water quality threshold, financial assurance, estimating the cost to the potential impact of the project, data management, materials selection and geochemistry, area of review calculations, and public support and regulatory collaboration. Opposition to such projects can center around the injection wells, subsurface pipelines, the construction of pipelines, and concerns about the risks of seismicity, infrastructure failures, and contamination of water. Those concerns come not just from the public, but regulators, she added. Companies planning CCS projects must utilize outreach to gain support, including coordinating with state and federal regulators, sending out notifications of the project, holding public hearings, soliciting public comment, and reaching out to a broad set of stakeholders. Take the opportunity to translate complex information to audience-appropriate levels. Quote, you want to speak to the community to ensure they understand what you are doing, that you're aware of the risks and have ways to address them, she said. Regulators focus on the regulations and don't care about a project developer's schedule or costs, which is why it's important to meet with them early and often throughout the process, she said. The people listening to her, she said, quote, are uniquely qualified to help move this industry forward, end quote. Master Gardeners. Sign-ups open for 2024 Master Gardener training classes. The story was written by Debbie Rowland and Emmy Almschneider, Master Gardeners. There are more than 84,000 Master Gardeners whose job it is to provide research-based information to the public. They do that by working in demonstration gardens, speaking at and sponsoring events, and partnering with organizations like 4-H to bring garden and food production skills to kids and their parents. The program brings science-based information backed by land-grant institutions, which in Texas is Texas A&M University. This gives the public information that they can trust. People become master gardeners for a variety of reasons. Some are beginning gardeners, and others are more advanced and want more knowledge. Some want to figure out how in the world to grow anything in our arid climate. Once they learn how, they are eager to pass along that information to their family, friends, and the public. These small classes provide a camaraderie that can last for years. As members get their education and volunteer hours, become certified, and involved in the local program, they help expand the local organization and support the community in all areas pertaining to horticulture. With our changing environment, it is important to stay updated on the recommendations to deal with those changes. Texas AgriLife Extension and Permian Basin Master Gardeners are organizing the 2024 training class now, and we encourage you to start making plans to join us. Classes will begin in January and are held on Thursdays at our local AgriLife offices, Midland and Odessa, beginning January 11, 2024. Each class is 3.5 hours long. Participants will learn about water conservation and rainwater harvesting, vegetables, plant propagation, lawn and tree care, low water landscaping or xeriscaping, soils and fertility, and identifying garden pests, to name a few. After completing the class, trainees will be interns and will complete close to 60 hours of education and 60 hours of volunteer work during 2024 at various local Master Gardener projects. Applications are available online at westtexasgardening.org or at both local Texas AgriLife Extension offices. Contact us in Odessa at 432-498-4171 or in Midland at 432-686-4700. If you have questions, call the AgriLife office in Odessa at 498-4071, in Midland at 686-4700, or email Sarah Moran at sarah.moran@ag.tamu.edu. Additional information and our blog for access to past articles is available at westtexasgardening.org. Click on Resources.
15 OC nursing graduates to sign with MCH. 15 soon-to-be associate degree nursing graduates will sign agreements with Medical Center Hospital District at a signing ceremony Tuesday at Odessa College. At the special ceremony at 9 a.m. December 5th in the Zant Room of the Salisbury Campus Center, the future graduates will sign an agreement committing to begin or continue their nursing careers at Medical Center Hospital. The students will graduate on Friday, December 7th. Students signing with or who have received official offers from MCH are Allison Blamey, Yeesther Sharid, Treya Rodriguez, Yasmin Ornelas, Yaritza Maldonado, Baylon Ruby Morales, Jesse Ortiz, Denise Anus, Denise Carmona, Crystal Garcia, Nikita Lugo, Diana Cortina Caro, Priscilla Lopez, Brittany Lucero, Gisela Ramirez, Holden Smith, Abigail Sanchez, and Danielle Leisher. Medical Center Hospital's support of our program makes it possible to have this type of transition for our graduating students, which in turn helps us to supply and fill some MCH's workforce needs, Odessa College Director of the Associate Degree Nursing Program, Yesenia Walsh, said in a news release. Featured speakers at the event will be OC President Dr. Gregory D. Williams, MCHD President and CEO Russell Tippin, and MCH Chief Nursing Officer Kimberly Leftwich.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, December 6th, 2023. Midland Health Hospital honors Tyler Smith's dedication with Daisy Award. Midland Memorial Hospital announced this week that Tyler Smith has been honored with the Daisy Award for Extraordinary Nurses. Smith is a dedicated nurse who has gone above and beyond expectations in providing patient-centered care with passion, kindness, skill, and trustworthiness. According to one patient's family member, quote, "Tyler never left my family member's side. If she wasn't in the room, she was right outside the window watching," end quote. Smith made a significant impact on this family and the care of their loved one, according to Kit Bredemus, Vice President and Chief Nursing Officer at Midland Memorial Hospital. Midland Health added, quote, "Tyler's commitment to providing compassionate care is evident in the way she interacts with her patients. She takes the time to get to know them and their families, and she is always willing to go the extra mile to ensure their comfort and safety. Tyler's dedication to her profession is an inspiration to her colleagues and patients alike. She is a shining example of what it means to be a nurse and is a true asset to Midland Memorial Hospital," end quote. The Daisy Award is a special honor given to extraordinary nurses for their commitment to providing exceptional care. Smith joins a worldwide community of extraordinary nurses who have impacted their patients in profound ways. For a complete listing of Daisy Award winners at Midland Memorial Hospital, please go to www.midlandhealth.org/main/daisy-award-4-extraordinary-nurses.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.